Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Brian Kelly, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, billionaire investor Warren Buffett sounding off on the Bitcoin boom.
In terms of cryptocurrencies, generally, I can say almost with certainty that they will come to a bad ending.
So, does the Dean of Valuation, Aswath Damodaran, agree with the Oracle of Omaha? He will be here to tell us what Bitcoin is really worth. Plus, gaming stocks are on fire. The CEO of Activision Blizzard, Bobby Kotick, will tell us how he's turning one of its most popular games into a sports league of its own and why that means big bucks for the stock. But first, the Dow surging back from a triple-digit loss today caused by a spike in rates this morning. For those who are unfamiliar with the concept, a loss is what happens when there are more sellers than buyers. But those losses were short-lived, with the Dow closing basically flat. So with stocks near record highs again, we thought we'd play a little Mission Impossible stock. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, find a cheap stock within the S&P, which is trading at its highest valuations in more than a decade. Are there parts of the market that you would still call cheap, Guy?
Well, we have our own Tom Cruise on the desk in the form of Tim Seymour,
who's smarter,
that's quite a compliment.
Better looking, and
I don't know how he turns.
Maybe
ideas.
Rob Lowe, but I mean, just kidding.
But Jack Wagner, possibly.
Anyway,
Karen and Tim have talked about the airlines being cheap. I'll leave that to them to discuss if they're so inclined. But I go and I look at some of these financials in the form of these insurance companies. For example, look at Prudential Financial. That stock is trading around 10 times forward P.E., has earnings growth of about roughly 14-15%. They just raised guidance recently. If you're looking for places that still offer value in potentially a rising rate environment, a name like Pru will get you done, Mel.
So financials.
In the form of financials with like an insurance tail. Mm.
What do you think?
Well, you know what? I'm gonna riff off of that. I'm gonna be a little bit controversial because you're gonna go BK.
Ooh, like
the PEs here are not low, but take a look at the retail brokers: E-Trade, Schwab. Why do I say they're cheap relative?
Record.
I know,
high,
I can hear Tim over there.
But
here's the thing. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness.
But if rates are going up, these guys make a ton of money in that environment. So that's my play.
Well, you don't
You know, look, I like where BK is going. Clearly, if we're in a market where everything's expensive, it means that people are out there trading, and these guys have had massive, massive runs. In fact, you know, to me, I took some profits in E-Trade about a month ago. Great trade. But I think the PEs are excessive. Let's stay, though, in financials. I'll take Guy's financials, and I'll up it with European financials that trade here. UBS, for example, trades at about 0.68 times price to tangible book. I think the European banks, they don't get the same bang for their buck from U.S. tax reform, although some of them, obviously, with operations here, do very well. I think the interest rate story that was also part of today's market, but we're just talking about stocks. I will say, though, as rates go higher in Europe, European banks do a lot better than U.S. banks. And I think, frankly, Europe's gotten a lot of their capital issues in order. I think these Swiss banks, but especially UBS, who are focusing in on wealth management, is especially cheap. And then I do have to go back to the autos because I look at GM and I say somewhere here around 7 times, even with a big rally in the stock, based upon recent guidance we've got on 2018, I'd stay right there.
Yeah, auto's tough day today, Karen.
Yeah, well, the GM, particularly NAFTA,
right, on the NAFTA,
the NAFTA mm-hmm. situation was what hit GM. I'm long GM. I like GM. I do think it's cheap. For me, the cheapest space, it moved a lot today, though. The airlines guy touched on it. There was some, I think, a recommendation city from an underperform, maybe to a buy on United, and then some decent data out of United and American. I think they're cheap here, certainly relative to the market, as they should be cheap. They're cyclical, right? But a lot of great things are happening in the economy, in their business. They are a beneficiary of the tax situation. So I think there's room to run here. I hate to say it on a day where they were up so big, but
you've been saying it a long time.
I've been saying it a long time. First half of the year is great. Second half of the year, not, you know, their third quarter last year, not so great. I've hung on the whole way. I still think they're cheap. Delta is my biggest position, but I have Delta, United, and American.
Mr. Bill Miller likes airlines as well, has liked them for quite some
and
time.
And so he clearly has been watching Karen and Tim on the show, The Fast Money at 5 o'clock. Let me mention, talk about Delta real quick. I believe they report earnings tomorrow. Mm. I also believe that they're currently trading around 10 or so times forward earnings. They're going to make, I think, close to $6 a share next year. You start doing the math, they should have a bigger multiple than that. Even if you give them an 11 multiple, it's a $66 stock. So I'm with Karen. I think earnings should be good, and these stocks seem to be breaking out to the upside.
And I'm with both of them, but I'll point out this on United, and I'll point on this for the airlines. I mean, you know, so United last night after the bell gave guidance on fourth quarter. The margin was indicated up 6.7%, which is the street was around 5.2. Even better, PRASM. Guy loves to talk about PRASM. Mm-hmm. Actually going to come in flat where it was expected to be slightly down. Here's the issue. They've got an investor day on the 23rd, and as our friend Hunter over at Wolf says, they may use this as a washout time to really set the table for 2019. And I still think that there are at least some choppiness in terms of some of their capacity issues and some of their efficiency issues for 2018. And they may not give you a lot of great stuff to go on, even though last night's guidance was fantastic. And the valuation these guys are talking about is important. Karen talked about just relative to GDP. Look, say what you want about the airlines in terms of multiples, but relative to a 3.5%, 4% GDP economy, these are very, very cheap stocks. They're trading as if we're going through a recession. We are not.
I think it's important. We mentioned this at the top, that cheap is and value is relative, right, in a market at record highs. But nobody has mentioned any dogs. Nobody's mentioned stocks that have really been challenged over the past year.
I mean, GE is the biggest dog that comes to mind, even though we remember it's not in the Dow.
It got kicked down.
It's not cheap. Right.
It's really not. And
Says the owner of GE.
Says the owner of GE.
At higher prices.
But I also think that this EPS guidance has been washed out. And I think these guys have intentionally, as they should have, taken the opportunity to say, we don't know exactly what we're going to do. We're focusing on two or three core businesses, and off we go. I still maintain the view that from an asset perspective, GE is very cheap. Not from an earnings perspective, and that's what gives me the comfort to hold this name right now.
I think I misspoke. GE may still be in the Dow. It was GM that got kicked out. In its doggy days.
Yes, true.
Well, the one that I've mentioned a couple times this week, and again, it's controversial, but so is my nature, IBM. I mean, that has been one of the biggest dogs out there.
Did you hear the Warren Buffett interview that Becky Quick so
capably sounded like he was selling to me.
It sounded like come February when the disclosure is out, there's going to be some big news regarding IBM.
But it sounded like part of that was also a tax for taxable reasons, so that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Okay.
Secondly, he bought that because of the buyback, right? My view on this is what's the catalyst that's going to move IBM shares higher? They are huge in the two biggest tech trends that we have coming up, AI and blockchain. Why wouldn't you want some of your portfolio to be in that? I think IBM does not get enough credit for that, and therefore that's why it's cheap and why I think it's going to get more expensive.
I think and BK's on to something. Tim gave him kudos about a week and a half ago, and I have hated IBM for a long time, but last quarter might have been an indication that maybe they finally turned this thing around, and it's very difficult to be short this stock in this environment into earnings when they potentially have. So there's a very good chance IBM, I can't believe I'm saying this, will continue to run into earnings with, I think it's like 2.5 weeks.
And let me just push back on this, because although I said it was a decent idea, and I think it was.
Now you walk that back?
I feel like you said it was one of my better ideas.
Yeah, one of your better ideas, which is really troubling because, here's what I want to say about IBM. I think there's a tendency at a time like this to say, we've got to find the next thing. We've got to really dig under the rubble.
Yeah.
And sometimes dogs are dogs. And IBM has been a proven dog for a long time because, as we've all talked about on this desk, it's a company that also has need to remake itself, but has also engineered earnings for a long, long time. So I think what they're doing in mainframe, actually, in terms of the infrastructure and the CapEx build-out, is actually very good for IBM in terms of infra tech. In terms of what they're doing in blockchain, I have no idea. I have to say I'm a little surprised it hasn't gotten more of a bid based upon the Kodak bid out there.
Right.
So, I mean, why hasn't IBM really rallied off of that, Brian? I mean, truly in play.
That's why I think they're not getting enough credit for it. I mean, what IBM is doing in the blockchain space are what are called private chains. It's basically back like when you had the internet, you had intranets within. So that doesn't get as high a multiple because it may not be as scalable as people think. That being said, it's not that hard to pivot from that private blockchain to a public blockchain, just like you did with the intranet into the internet. And that, to me, is why I think what people are missing with IBM.
All right. Our next guest says we are not on track, just on track for the longest bull market ever. We also might be on track for the greatest bull market ever. Wow. It has been a while since we've seen Julian Emanuel. He is now Chief Equity and Derivative Strategist at BTIG. Congratulations on the job change. What's so great about this bull market, Julian?
Well, it really has been 9 glorious years. Built on gains derived from low rates, earnings growth and multiple expansion, significant multiple expansion. However, the road to 3,000, we think, is going to be a little bit different. We think the gains this year are going to be built on earnings growth, and we don't actually need multiple expansion because we're going to have single-digit, high single-digit, low double-digit earnings growth bolstered by the tax reform. So the question is, after gains of 305%, could this end up being the greatest bull market of all time? Quite possibly. But if that's the case, we're going to have to beat the bull market of the 1990s. However, in our view, if you keep interest rates in check, you keep this global synchronized growth metric in check, and earnings growth continues apace, we think you could get there by the time this bull market's run its course.
Greatest bull market ever.
Should we invite Julian over?
Come on over, Julian. Karen will bring the chair in. Thank you, Karen. Take a seat, Julian. Welcome to the desk.
Great to be here.
What's the thing, though, that could derail the greatest bull market ever?
Well, it's a couple of things. First off, if we get too far in the 10-year yield, I mean, part of this entire story, 3% is too far, in our view.
3% is too far, okay.
Yeah. I mean, the distance between where we are now and 3% is going to be a reflection of a more growthier metric. But you get a little too far, and stocks will have to start discounting the fact that rates are higher than expected. The other thing, of course, would be if the economy starts to turn over. We don't see that. Recession probabilities are very low. Things are growing nicely. If that happened to happen and the Fed continued raising rates, which is how bull markets typically end, that's where we run into problems as well.
So Fed missteps is probably at the top of your list of things that can go wrong.
Yes.
What's the probability, though, of that happening?
Well, you can't discount it, because if you look in the past, when you've had Fed leadership transitions, as we're about to have, markets have run into problems. It happened when Greenspan took over from Volcker in 1987. The financial crisis happened a year after Bernanke took over, and markets tend to have to digest.
Those weren't self-inflicted, though.
They weren't.
This would be self-inflicted.
Well, but the fact is that it's not just Powell at the top that's going to be different. It's a whole leadership, you know, sort of the makeup's going to change. So the market's going to have to get the confidence that the Fed is going to be able to keep things moving on the right track.
Julian, I've known you for a long time, and I got to tell you, I mean, a guy hearing you this confident about markets, I mean, this is a very smart strategist, a guy who looks for what's wrong. And I know we've talked about the Fed, but isn't the fact that consumer confidence and business confidence are at record highs, isn't that alone telling you that we are at extreme levels? That, in fact, a guy like you who thinks, a little contrarian, that's wrong. That tells me the market is off sides, that positioning is already here. I mean, it can't all be that good.
Well, fair point. And that's part of why we think that this year's narrative is volatility moves higher. There's got to be a dose of reality. 2017 was too easy. The money was too fast, let's say. But for us, the fact is that this global synchronized growth metric, it doesn't die easily. And that's really significant underpinnings. And yes, we're worried about valuation. It's a concern every day, and we get lots of questions on it. But until rates really start to move, we can move
higher. And it's not valuation. It's confidence to me. I think people are too complacent.
Last quick question, Julian, then we'll let you go. 3%, do we hit that this year?
We don't think you do.
Okay.
You know, we're sort of keying off of consensus, and that's around 288, 290.
So we've got at least another year for the greatest bull market ever, in your view, basically.
Of all time.
That's what we're thinking.
Okay. Julian, good
bold
to see
call.
You. Thank you.
Thank you.
Julian Emanuel.
He's probably right.
BTIG now. What do you think?
You know, listen, if you look at the market today, what are the risks out there? It's the bond market. And we saw it this morning. We saw bond yields up. All of a sudden, for the first time, futures were down 10 handles. That was like run around with your hair on fire. Big news. I mean, it's not really that big news, but for this market, it was big news. So I agree with Julian that I think somewhere around 3% seems to be the trigger that most people are saying, hey, you know what? This is going to start to impact valuations. We're going to have to start taking our earnings down, start taking our targets down. You might want to get ahead of it and start taking some profits when they get to about 2.9 on the 10-year.
What have you done today? What do you think of the whole greatest bull market ever?
I mean, I'm long. Always long. That's my bias. I, you know, buy S&P puts against it, thinking the volatility will spike higher, which happens like for an hour, and then they expire worthless, which is okay because it, you know, helps me sleep at night. I am long the TBT. There's other instruments out there, though. I do think, to me, the biggest risk is inflation forces the Fed's hand, and they got to move more quickly than the market. The market is okay with what's on plan right now.
So
with the
spike
map
in
shows,
rates.
Yes, an unexpected significant spike in rates.
What'd you do today?
I actually added to a little Embraer ERJ, which is a stock that I think fits into our earlier discussion. And I would just highlight, though, that the JNK and the HYG, which are the high-yield ETFs, big ETFs, have both traded today and yesterday through the 50, through the 100, through the 200 moving averages. That, to me, is at least showing sensitivity to credit.
All right, coming up, the dean of valuation, Aswath Damodaran, says you can't value Bitcoin. But there is one surge in cryptocurrency that you can value. He'll tell you what it is. Plus, gaming stocks are on fire. Activision Blizzard is making a major bet on one of its biggest games that could have the stock soaring. We'll talk to the CEO later this hour. And later, one retail stock is surging, and someone on this desk thinks it's just the beginning of a major turnaround. We'll tell you the name and the trade. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's take a look at Target topping the tape. Shares soaring more than 2% today, now up more than 6% this week after the company raised guidance, reported stronger than expected holiday sales. So after a lackluster year, are Target shares finally hitting the bullseye? Are they the next Walmart?
Nice.
Karen?
I don't know. Maybe. I actually thought the stock would have been up more today than it was. Maybe, you know, it wasn't a great tape, wasn't a horrible tape, but I thought that was pretty good, and I think they see some momentum, and I mean, why, you know, they didn't, I don't think this is a out over their skis kind of guidance, so I think it's a possibility that maybe they do better than that. It's not super cheap, and nothing is super cheap right now if they get anything close to a Walmart multiple. I think it's sort of interesting right here.
Forced to choose.
Would
you rather? Oh. This is a disguise, my little trick.
Yeah.
They didn't switch here. Target or Walmart? Guy.
TGT. TGT, and we sat on, not on this desk, upstairs, July 13th. We've
upstairs,
had this conversation.
We are upstairs.
Yeah, what
downstairs.
Are you talking about?
Or upstairs?
Somebody's,
this is upstairs.
There are some stairs involved.
This is,
you know,
upstairs.
You're right. We are.
Right.
I'm getting
there
confused.
Is no upstairs.
Well, you're
anyway,
getting upstairs in the years.
6:30,
right.
It was 6:30 in the morning.
In the morning.
July 13th,
oh, yeah,
Target came
okay.
out. Stock was trading 53, raised guidance. I looked at you and said, don't fade this move, Mel. Remember that
yeah,
conversation?
Yeah, I remember that very
and
clearly.
Except for a brief period of time, a couple weeks ago, after they reported the stock has been a rocket ship. No, it's not cheap, but it's cheap in comparison to Walmart, and I think the stock does have some runway,
which
too.
Gets to the conversation we had at the top of the show. Is it value? Is Walmart still value? Is Target
Walmart
the
is
better
not value?
Walmart
the,
is not
value.
Walmart relative to itself is trading almost at a 2-standard deviation. I mean, Walmart is, look, but it's old self. Didn't have this whole e-commerce thing that people think is going to compete with Amazon, and therefore the multiple probably somewhere in the middle. If Target gets any of this, Target, who also made some noise about their ability to compete in e-commerce, this is where these multiples really do get the benefit of not only in Target's case, as Guy pointed out, cheap to its peers, relatively in line with itself.
So it's
but
value.
Maybe that multiple needs to go higher.
There's also a tiny chance, I wouldn't own it for this reason, but there is a tiny chance that Target could get acquired. That is possible. Walmart, it is
like the Gene Munster Amazon,
like Amazon
target
right.
sort of
right.
It is possible.
Right.
I wouldn't pay anything for it, but
right.
that is a possibility that Walmart right. does not have. Yeah.
Well, and so for me, the catalyst here, I would pick Target to answer your question. I've liked Walmart quite a bit all through 17, but here I think there's just more upside surprise that can come out of Target, right? We know what Walmart's strategy is. I'm not saying it's a bad strategy. It actually worked quite well for them. But now Target has multiple steps they can hit. You know, maybe there's that talk out there. You have a bid under there for some reason that they might get taken over. But I still think there are catalysts in 2018 that other companies like Walmart don't have.
All right. Still ahead. Domino CEO Patrick Doyle is about to speak to Jim Cramer, his first interview since announcing he is stepping down from the C-suite in June. We'll bring you those comments later this hour. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
I can say almost with certainty that they will come to a bad ending.
Warren Buffett bashing Bitcoin. But after you hear what he said about internet stocks in the 90s, you might go full crypto. We'll explain. Plus,
shall we play a game?
We shall, because video game stocks are on fire, and esports could take one of them to new highs. The name when Fast Money returns.
in terms of cryptocurrencies generally, I can say almost with certainty that they will come to a bad ending. Now, when it happens or how or anything else, I don't know. But I know this. I get into enough trouble with things I think I know something about. Why in the world should I take a long or short position in something I don't know anything about?
That was Warren Buffett earlier today when he sat down with our own Becky Quick, saying some harsh words about the future of cryptocurrencies. Now, this isn't the first time Buffett has bashed a new speculative industry with sky-high valuations. Take a listen to what the Oracle of Omaha said about internet stocks 20 years ago.
I would say there's no one here that can understand some new internet company. And I said at the annual meeting this year that if I were teaching a class in business school on the final exam, I would pass out the information on an internet company and ask each student to value it. And anybody that gave me an answer, I'd flunk.
Go Gators, by the way.
That's what Buffett told Florida University students in 1998 about valuing internet companies. Well, internet stocks have come a long way since then, as the tech sector makes up about 24% of the S&P 500. It did have that minor dip in between. But is this deja vu? And is Buffett right about crypto? Or does one of the greatest investors of all time have it all wrong? It says, go to BK. I'm going to try and guess what you're going to say. Yes, he's got it all wrong.
Well, I don't know. You know what? I'm not going to say he's got it all wrong. There are parts of the crypto market that are in a speculative frenzy that are, you know, you're getting valuations in some of these things. And I'm not necessarily talking about Bitcoin, but some of the smaller coins, you're starting to see the speculative frenzy. They don't have much behind them. And you know what? They will end up badly in that particular sense. But that being said, I think the important thing to remember here is, you know, you had a bubble in the internet stocks, but it was still a transformative technology, and you could still make a lot of money on it. And Amazon and Facebook and Google all came out of that era. So if you're looking for what is the next internet investment over a long time frame, then I think Buffett's completely wrong.
Yeah, but look, and I'm invested there, but I mean, you can't say, first of all, I don't know how we're doing valuations, Brian. I mean, you talk about valuations being fraught. I'm not even sure what's there, but I'm surprised Mr. Buffett didn't talk about the equities that are attached to crypto and putting valuations and why he didn't reference a Kodak, which, you know, maybe I'll look even sillier when it's $30 a share. But to me, I don't understand this. I will say, and this goes back to that RBC interview we had on crypto the other night. I mean, the fact that the internet was really conceptual. So the decentralization that's coming from crypto is something I think a lot of people have a tough time finding the applications for, and it's there.
All right. Well, our next guest agrees with Warren Buffett. Aswath Damodaran is known as Wall Street's Dean of Valuations, a professor at NYU Stern School of Business. He joins us now from San Diego, California. Dean, great to have you with us. Dean in quotes, of course. Is Warren Buffett right on crypto?
I think he's brushing the entire sector with too broad a brush, because I don't think you can write off cryptocurrencies altogether. Is it going to end badly for some of the people involved? Absolutely. It's going to end badly for those people who got under the bandwagon late and are playing the pricing game. That's all they're doing. They're hoping to buy at a low price and sell at a high price. And for some of them, it's going to end badly. But looking forward, I agree with your panel that there is a future for fintech. And I think we mix together lots of different kinds of crypto investments in the cryptocurrency space. Some of them are going to succeed. Some of them are going to not. So I think to put them all together in one big bucket and throw them over the edge doesn't make any sense to me.
Is that why you think you can value Ethereum versus Bitcoin?
Yeah. In fact, when I look at the cryptocurrency buckets, I see three separate buckets. There's the cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, which cannot be valued because they're currencies. They're crypto commodities. Ethereum is a crypto commodity. What's different about Ethereum is it's not marketed as a currency. It's marketed as a lubricant for smart contracts. And smart contracts are what the fintech, the blockchain revolution, is going to deliver. And if Ethereum can become a significant part of that business, you can value it as a commodity. And there are crypto assets, which are what the ICOs are, which can be valued as slices of businesses. So I think to view them all as useless and worthless is, I think, wrong.
It's Karen, let me ask you something. In the original, I guess, internet bubble, 2000, did you find that you had the same ideas about difficulty of valuation, and were there other metrics that got you comfortable then?
You know what? I love valuing difficult to value companies. It makes me strange. I get them wrong every single time.
That's
what you
got
to do.
I valued Amazon every year since 97. I've bought Amazon four times. I've sold Amazon four times. I didn't buy it at the right time. I didn't sell it at the right time. But to me, there is a way to value these companies. You cannot walk away saying, I don't understand a business, so I cannot value it. Because the older you get, the more of the world you're not going to understand. So if you take the Buffett view, most of the world is going to start to be off, you know, out of bounds for you. So I think we've got to try to value businesses, even if they're young, even if they're in places where everything is evolving, everything is changing.
So I want to get back to Ethereum, since you think that we can evaluate or value Ethereum. How is it valued right now relative to how it's trading?
I'll be quite honest. I think every single crypto asset is being priced right now. It's not being valued. What I mean by that is if you ask people why they're paying what they are for any of these crypto investments, you don't get a fundamental answer. You don't get a logical answer. You get an answer of, I think I can make more money on this. So I don't think any of these investments are being valued right now. They're being priced. But that's not unusual either. You could say the same thing about the dot-com sector in the late 90s, is every company was priced. Eventually, valuations matter. And that eventually might be a year from now, 2 years from now. And maybe that's what Buffett is talking about when he talks about a bad end, is when that valuation time comes, some of these crypto investments are not going to hold up. So right now, I don't think anybody's valuing a crypto investment. They're all pricing it.
Okay, they're priced. But how do you value it? Or have you put a valuation on it so we can gauge what the disparity is?
I'll tell you what's holding me back. I don't see a business model yet from Ethereum. I mean, they're talking the talk, but they're not walking the walk yet. They're talking about how there are lubricants in the smart contracting business, but they're not being lucid about the way they plan to make money on that business. So I can't get ahead of them and create a business model for them. That's not my job. So until they create a business model, I'm kind of holding back. But I think that that's going to be the next phase in the crypto investment market, is you're going to start to see people pushing these crypto investments to come up with business models to show how they will make money. But that's part of the life cycle of investments as well.
Hey, Dean, it's Brian Kelly. So I'm curious about that, because Ethereum is an open source project. It's not a company, so they're not going to put forth a business model necessary. And part of their value or their value prop is that they are the picks and shovels. You can build on top of this. Isn't that the business model?
But eventually, the picks and shovels have to get pennies on the dollar, or cents on the dollar, because without it, the picks and the shovels are worth nothing, right? So ultimately, even if it's an open source model, some of the revenue generated from using those picks and shovels have to accrue to Ethereum. If that doesn't happen, it's worth nothing. If that does happen, it's worth something. So the fact that it's an open source model that's giving the picks and shovels doesn't make it necessary that you will not be able to generate those cents on the dollar.
Aswath, thanks for your time. Always great to get your analysis.
Thank you.
Aswath Damodaran of NYU, the Dean of Valuation.
The dean.
So do you agree in any way that there's really no way to put a valuation on the cryptocurrencies?
On currencies themselves, they're notoriously hard to value because a currency, really every currency, whether it's gold or the euro or the U.S. dollar, is a matter of faith. Can I use this to buy something in the future? So it's very, very difficult. I think the best way to value these is to look at these as social networks. So we look at Facebook and we look at Twitter and say, what are the monthly active users? How much time do they spend on it? I think a very similar metric is to say, okay, you know, how much activity is going on the Ethereum network or the Bitcoin network? How much development is going on? And that, to me, are the metrics that you should start using to value these. And in that sense, you know,
Do you put a dollar value for every transaction added to the Bitcoin network? I mean, how do we come up with this price of $14,395 on our Bitcoin bug there?
It's transaction volume
and number
price,
of users.
Is there a market cap per volume? I would aggressively
argue against the view that the dollar and the euro you can't value, though. I mean, I think there's trade-weighted terms. I think there's purchasing power parity. I think there's actually all types of metrics relative to themselves. But I don't think you're wrong in crypto. I really don't. I think you're right. But I think the FX market is very different.
Still ahead. More Bitcoin, of course. And if Buffett's harsh words for Bitcoin have you worried about your crypto profits, don't be, because BK has a way you can protect yourself. He'll explain how to do it later in the show. Plus, Activision Blizzard making a huge splash in the esports space as its new Overwatch League kicks off tonight. The Activision CEO will be here in just a few minutes. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's take a look at some of the hottest tech stocks over the last year. No, we are not talking Apple or FANG stocks. We're talking about gaming stocks. Names like Take-Two. What is that music for?
Sounds like Pac-Man.
Mario. It's Mario. Activision and Electronic Arts all seeing double, even triple-digit gains. This is the popularity of esports continues to explode. For more, let's bring in Julia Boorstin and Activision CEO Bobby Kotick, who just made a huge play in the esports space. Julia, take it away.
Thanks so much, Melissa. And Bobby, thank you for joining us now. You're at the new Blizzard Esports Studios, new Blizzard Esports Arena, which is opening at Burbank Studios. I know this is a really big day for you as you launch your new Overwatch League. Bobby, when will we start to see esports really impact your bottom line?
Well, I think it's a ways before you're going to see certain revenue streams, but we're already seeing a lot of traction and enthusiasm from fans. And the most important thing for us is that this is the opportunity to celebrate the very best players in the world. Our professional players from these 12 teams are the very best Overwatch players in the world, and it's really exciting to be able to celebrate them.
Do you think the big picture is more about promoting your games through the competition of esports, or is it more about the revenue that you're going to drive through these competitions themselves?
Look, I think, you know, it's a you have the benefit of both. You know, with 35 million Overwatch players who are enthusiastic players, they're very invested in the experience of Overwatch, the opportunity to have this spectator experience that is the most professional, high-quality, competitive experience to watch is going to be very exciting for people. And I think that what we've already seen is a lot of traction and interest from team owners. I think when you see the production values of the events themselves, they are the very, very best production values in sport. And I think you're going to see a lot of audience enthusiasm. We already have fantastic broadcast partners like Twitch and MLG. We already have great sponsors like Hewlett-Packard and Intel. We have licensing that is really underway. And so I think all of the commercial opportunities that exist in professional sports are opportunities that are available to us also. Plus, you have virtual items. You have, you know, over-the-top advertising opportunities that wouldn't exist in traditional sports. So, you know, we have the best of all worlds, and we have an enormous fan base that we're satisfying.
Your Overwatch League signed a deal with Amazon's Twitch for reportedly for about $90 million. How important is Amazon and Twitch as a partner for Activision Blizzard?
They're very important. You know, I think Twitch has done a great job of building out an audience and a lot of enthusiasm for esports. And while most of what has been available on Twitch has been user-generated content, you're now starting to see, and especially with Overwatch League, highly produced professional content that we really think is going to transform the viewing experience.
You mentioned digital sales. You've benefited a lot from digital sales, one factor really driving your stock up this year. How much more is there room for digital revenue to grow?
Well, we don't sell a lot of analog things, so the bulk of our revenues will continue to be digital.
Meaning that everything's digital?
We make zeros and ones for a living. That's what our enterprise does.
Well, speaking of digital revenue, will you accept bitcoins or other cryptocurrency as part of those payments that consumers make?
You know, our view about payment, we have 400 million customers around the world in 196 countries. And one of the things we worked really hard to do is make sure that the payment that is the payment methodology of choice for the customer is the one that they have access to. So, you know, we're very supportive of whatever it is, the mechanism that our customers choose to pay.
Sounds like bitcoins are going to be the next big payment method, perhaps, for you guys. Well, Bobby Kotick, thank you so much for joining us from your new Blizzard Esports Arena. We hope you'll come back and talk to us more again after earnings. Melissa, back over to you.
All right, Julia, thanks so much. Julia Boorstin with Activision CEO Bobby Kotick. What do you make of the stock?
Well, I mean, the stock's been a rocket ship. And valuation, it's an expensive stock. And given the trajectory of the move, it's hard to get on back. But then you say to yourself, wait a second, they're the leader in this whole thing that I don't understand, that Tim did a whole thing on about a year or so ago.
League of Legends.
It's
insane.
Robert Kraft.
How did you not know that music at the top, though?
Maybe I did. Maybe I was just quietly enjoying it myself.
That music.
I love that. It's like Led Zeppelin to me.
So I think it's a it's almost a free option on that whole digital sports thing. You're getting tremendous upside. The optionality in this stock is tremendous. So I think you stay with it.
Yeah, Tim.
Well, if you think about what's going on in esports, it's a $700 billion business. It's a $700 million business, which is probably going to be $1.5 billion by 2020. Activision, if anything, I think they've given kind of a conservative guide after a very big move in the stock. And if you think about the multiples, but you think about what's growing here and the demographics. So 80% of this of the players here are 18 to 34. Mm-hmm. Apparently, 65% of them actually have a job, which is also amazing to me. So again, you have people that are going to be consistent users that are going to be manic users on some level, and you're getting them young. And it's all changing. I mean, I think the sports world better watch out.
And they're spending money inside. What's interesting about that Bitcoin question, actually, there are quite a few coins that are being created so you can buy digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, buy within the games. You can buy skins within the games. Not only that, skins for your sword, stuff like that. But the other thing is, remember Mark Cuban did an initial coin offering. You're also able now to bet on these games. Not if you're in the U.S., but outside the U.S., you're going to be able to bet just like horse racing.
My kids ask me about skins. I get worried.
What are they in the game?
Not really sure. In Minecraft, he's always telling me about I got to get a new skin.
Yeah, it's basically like your outfit.
Get a new skin, guy.
Given the potential growth here, though, this stock doesn't really seem that expensive to me, right? I mean, it's a high multiple.
Could be value, even though it's skyrocketed?
Well, I guess if we get back to our Bitcoin conversation, yes, it's extraordinary value on a metric basis relative to its growth. I don't know. I think that, I mean, it's always been expensive. It deserves to be expensive. And this potential growth, I think it's not crazy.
Other guys in this space, also Tencent owns a piece of Blizzard. Vivendi is very big in the space, so there's no other names other than this one.
All right. Well, there's one gaming stock on a big winning streak, and options traders are betting on even more gains ahead. Let's get to Mike Coe out in Austin, Texas with more. Hey, Mike.
Hi there. So Take-Two Interactive, which is going to be reporting February 9th, saw four times as many calls trade today as puts, and where we saw a lot of that activity was the February 120 calls. 1,500 of those traded for about $3.50. So buyers of those calls are betting that Take-Two is going to rise above that $120 strike price by the $350 that they paid, or up more than 7% by February expiration, which is just over 5 weeks away. Now, I would point out this stock does tend to move on earnings, and with that in mind, these don't actually seem that expensive. And at 26 times earnings, to Karen's point, growing at double-digit rates, maybe it's not that expensive a stock either.
All right. For more options action, thanks, Mike, for that. You can check out the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, longtime Domino's CEO Patrick Doyle announcing his departure from the pizza chain this week. And you won't believe what he just told CNBC's Jim Cramer about his tenure at the company. We'll bring you those comments. Plus, Bitcoin bear Warren Buffett voicing his concerns about the cryptocurrency on CNBC today. So if you're worried he might be right, what should you do? Brian Kelly's got a simple way to protect your profits. He'll break it all down in just a few minutes. More Fast Money still ahead.
If I could buy long-term puts, if I could buy a five-year put on every one of the cryptocurrencies, I'd be glad to do it, but I would never short a dime's worth.
So if Warren Buffett's cryptic crypto warning rings true, how can you protect your profits? Our crypto baller, BK, is back. He's here to tell us how to protect your Bitcoin gains. Beak.
Yeah, so there are actually some ways to do it now. So Warren, if you happen to buy some Bitcoin, put down your Cherry Coke and listen to this. This is how you do it. How do I protect my gains? So we're talking about a hedging strategy here. So it's very important to identify that key level. So in a hedging strategy, you don't want to be hedging 100% all the time. You want to be hedging when you think there's going to be an event. So you identify that key level, that's your trigger. Now, with the CBOE contracts, there's one Bitcoin per contract. So if I buy or sell one CBOE contract, that means I'm protecting one BTC worth of my portfolio. Then you're going to take it off when it moves about 20%, which sounds like a big move, but for Bitcoin, that can be a warning sometimes. So let's go to the chart and see how this works. So we had today 1350 on the Bitcoin futures, on the February futures, was the low of today. To me, that's that key level, because that really comes in at support right there. So if it breaks 1350, I want to go with the momentum and protect my position. So for every one Bitcoin I own, I'm going to sell one CBOE contract. And if we drop down 20%, You're talking about $10,000 roughly or so. So you have profits on that whole thing. Now, in this, you're not going to put a stop, a protective stop in, because remember, you're long Bitcoin already. This is to protect that position.
All right, so is it just for Bitcoin only, or are there other ones that you can use the strategy for?
So most of these currencies do trade with a high correlation to Bitcoin. Bitcoin's still the big daddy of the place. Sometimes that correlation breaks, but in general, if you have, let's say, a $100,000 crypto portfolio, for somebody like Guy, it's probably a $100 million crypto portfolio, you can still use this, and it won't be a perfect hedge, but it'll help.
Brian, I think the ultimate question is a lot of liquidity is coming into this market and there's a lot more sophistication. Why just Bitcoin futures? Why not four or five other major crypto instruments to be able to trade? When's it happening?
I think it's going to happen very, very soon. I mean, we already had the Bitcoin futures. Would not surprise me to see Ethereum futures coming next. That's probably the next thing on the thing. I think we should have it. We need the sophistication because these are hedging tools. These are de-risking tools. These are volatility dampening tools. It should be part of this ecosystem.
All right. Right. Thanks. Thanks for that. Class is adjourned.
Wow. Love that chalkboard. That was cool.
Still ahead, outgoing Domino CEO Patrick Doyle sitting down with CNBC's Jim Cramer moments ago for his first interview since announcing his departure. We'll give you an exclusive sneak peek at what he said. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a Cramer alert here. The CEO of Domino's speaking to Jim moments ago about stepping down from the pizza delivery company after about 8 years at the helm. Take a listen to what he said.
I am thinking about nothing but Domino's until midnight on June 30th. And then my wife and I are going to go off and take 6 months and figure out what our next adventure is going to be. And I'm not going to retire. I'm too young for that. I'm going to keep doing something, but I have no idea what that's going to look like.
Stock falling about 3% today as investors took in the announcement, which happened last night during our show. Of course, Tim, he meant a lot for the stock in terms of turning it around.
I think he meant a ton. And I think he's a visionary for the industry. And I think, you know, we talked about this at other times. When we talk about DPZ, we talk about their ability to begin to utilize technology and make the offering and be able to consolidate an industry that needs to be consolidated. They're doing it and they're growing globally. And they're doing it right now at a valuation that probably is commensurate with the valuation. But remember, there's been a lot of volatility in the stock over the last few months. And we traded all the way down to 165 before, coming right back over 200 now. I think the stock's probably a hold with still some uncertainty. And this transition is as confident as I am that Patrick Doyle will engineer that. Uh-huh. I think we just still need to hear more.
He's 54 years old. He says he is not going to retire. He's going to take a trip first. But after that, he could be on the list somewhere to be another CEO who can turn a company around, who has done it, a consumer company, perhaps.
Yep. What do you think? I can see you're thinking about something.
I don't know. Are there CEOs that are Chipotle, perhaps?
I wonder, though, if he has a non-compete. When you have a talent like that,
he may.
I would think.
I don't know.
I wouldn't want him out there.
I want to listen to Jim's interview. Yeah. I got to tell you, that sounds interesting. Yeah.
I should have known when he did those first ads in 2010 our pizza is awful.
Right. Yeah.
That was fantastic. The stock was 10. I probably thought, I'd rather buy it at 9.
Can you imagine an ad? A Chipotle ad?
Sure.
Yeah. You get like two dommies for $5 and hope you survive the next day.
No, but it's in terms of crisis management. He took it head on.
Imagine if he did a CMG ad.
See you this time next year.
I know you're afraid to walk in here.
Right.
Because you might be worried about the reports of foodborne illnesses.
But I'm here and I'm going to clean it up. There's a new sheriff in town and his name is
Patrick Doyle.
But we're a year away from that. So, who knows what happens to CMG in that place? I mean, I think,
actually, if some of your star workers could rise up the chain,
like
possibly, and find yourself in upper management. Look at that.
He has extensive experience.
No, it's troubling here. I don't see gloves. I don't see
a hairnet.
I'm really not sure.
No hairnet.
Right.
My hands were thoroughly washed and I don't have any hair.
Do not miss the full interview with Domino's CEO Patrick Doyle in just a few minutes on Mad Money. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Tim.
I think Brazil's Embraer ERJ ticker is one of the best companies in the world and obviously is in play, ERJ.
Karen.
My biggest fear for this market if rates move too quickly, so TBT is a decent hedge for that.
Speakers.
I like Overstock here. A little snafu today, but I think it's going to be all right for them. OSTK.
Gee.
Delta Airlines in earnings, sister.
I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks for watching. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast. Don't go anywhere. Mad Money starts right now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.